First panel of the day is going to deal with cash grain and cash grain analysis. We have quite the team of experts to discuss the topic this morning. Let me introduce the panel. To my immediate right is Aaron Curtis. He is with MITCO right here in Bloomington Normal. And he is on our air every Monday morning for the opening commodity report. Next to him is Bill Mayer of Strategic Farm Marketing. He's in Champaign, Illinois, and he joins us every Friday morning on the opening market report. Next to him is our good friend, Matt Bennett, and Matt is with Channel Seed Company's Grain Marketing, and he is their consultant based primarily out of Windsor, Illinois, and he is on our closing market report on Thursdays. And then down at the end of the table is Greg Johnson of the Andersons out of Champaign, Illinois. And either Greg or one other of the fine analysts there joins us every Monday afternoon on the closing market report. We'll begin with asking the four panelists for a opening statement around 2 to 2.5 minutes. And the question that's before you is, what do you believe the status of the grain market will be going into, the cash grain market will be going into 2015. And we'll begin down at the far end of the table with Greg Johnson. Good morning, Greg.
Thanks, Dave. Well, I would say first thing off, we should all thank the railroad for the less than stellar performance that we've seen so far, because if you think about it, that has translated into a lot of double buying, a lot of extra demand that we wouldn't have seen otherwise. A lot of the livestock feeders in the southeast that we sell corn to, for example, and soybeans, had bought their needs as estimated needs by rail. And when the railroad cars did not show up, they had to turn and come back into the market and buy again by truck to cover that to cover those needs. Now, eventually, those rail cars will show up, we think, but they haven't yet. So eventually, that will weigh on the market. But in the short run, we've seen a lot of extra demand show up from the livestock market. You combine that with the fact that farmers have had three very good years financially, and they have been in no hurry to sell. So you've had good buying, very low selling from the farmers. That's combined to help us out with this October-November rally that we've seen, both from a futures point of view and from a basis point of view. And then when you throw the fund buying that we've really seen in the last 6 weeks on top of that, that's basically the reason that we've seen the rallies that we've seen. Where do we go from here? Well, as I said, in the short run, this double buying has been friendly to the basis. Our fear is that at some point in time, those rail cars will show up. The feeders will not need to buy as much when those rail cars do show up. So that will cut into the demand a little bit. Farmers at some point in time, I think, will need to sell. So that may not be till Jan, Feb, or March. But as a result, we are looking at basis levels probably not as good as what we've seen historically. I know a lot of people keep track of five-year basis levels. I would say look at those charts and then maybe take a nickel off of that. I think we'll see basis levels not quite get to the kind of levels we've seen in the past 5 years. Basis levels have improved a lot, and they can still improve some more, but I don't think we'll see the kind of basis levels that we've seen in the past 5 years, simply because we've kind of deferred the selling from Ocknov to maybe Jan, Feb, March. That's just my guess as far as when farmers let loose of it. But when we do, that should see a weakening in the basis at that point. But that's still several months down the road.
Thank you, Greg. Matt Bennett.
Well, there's really not a whole lot about what Greg said that I would have any argument with. The reasons why we've gotten to the point that we've gotten to as far as basis levels and rally. I mean, if you stop and think about it, most of us going into harvest, about everyone that comes in up here today, I think if they're honest, would tell you that this rally wasn't something that any of us were really looking for at the point in time that we got it. I mean, you know, biggest all-time record crop, and then you go ahead and you rally these markets 60 to 80 cents and a buck 50, not to mention you pick up 30 cents in basis. I mean, Decatur appreciation in basis, 30 cents in 1 month, basically in the crux of harvest. I mean, it's unbelievable to see that kind of a movement, not only in your futures, but in your basis as well. And so, you know, what am I going to do with that as a producer? And I think we all need to be very conscious of where we have been. We've gotten this rally. The rally doesn't do you a whole lot of good unless you do something with it. And I know we all want to have higher prices. We all want better situations. But most of you who are sitting in this room are similar to what I am on my farm and a lot of the producers I have, in that you have very good production this year. And so whenever you get that sort of a rally and you look and see what that means to you on a per-acre basis, dollars per acre is significant. And so what do I look for moving forward? I'm like Greg. I think the basis is going to weaken. And I think whenever this soybean meal situation is fully figured out and the rail is able to catch up, I think you're going to see soybeans having a really tough time. It's going to be tough to find arguments to move the bean market higher. I think the path to least resistance moving forward is going to be lower. And I think it's going to be pretty tough for the corn market to be able to tread water in there, even though I see some positives whenever I'm looking at the 15 crop.
Thank you much, Matt. Bill Mayer?
Good morning, everyone. I guess the thing I'd like to emphasize today is, as far as bases and the cash markets go, over the last 3 years, we've had, you know, it's been fairly easy. We haven't had to carry in the market. We haven't had to look at what the basis levels are out front and work as hard at it, quite frankly. We may have to kind of relearn how to go out and pull that 15, 20 cents out of the market in spreads and pull that 15, 20 cents out of the market in basis improvement to be able to get those profitable levels that it may be make the difference between profit levels and non-profit levels. So I think one of the emphasis on that is that you don't have to price the futures and basis at the same time. The cash price is made up of the futures less the basis, and there are situations where you may want to lock the basis in. There's situations where you may want to lock the futures in and lock the basis in later. So I think, I guess all I'm saying there is I think we're just going to need to kind of set back and refocus on that. As far as where we're at, I guess the thing that I see both in the cash market as well as the futures, I just see a lot of volatility, and I think we'll see more volatility in the basis. I wouldn't disagree with what these guys are saying as far as the outlook and what Greg said as far as being probably some lower numbers in general. But, like, for example, over the weekend I was looking, we've got a big difference just in central Illinois of probably about 10 to 12 cents today on corn between one processor and the other in central Illinois on basis levels. That's a big deal as we move into these lower price levels. So I think we continue to see volatility and being as flexible as you can, locking in some price floors and getting yourself in a position where you can go out and lock the bases in later or depending on your area and where you're at is the way we need to really focus here as we go into the spring.
Thank you, Bill. Aaron Curtis.
Thanks, Dave. From the elevator side, which is our customer base, it's been a pretty strange harvest. I mean, we get our customers together there at the first part of August and kind of plan ahead for the fall season. And at that point of the year, everybody was assuming that we were going to have huge truck lines, corn piled all over the place, and it was going to be a considerable mess. And here we flash forward here 3 months later, and yeah, there's corn piled around, but for the most part, we never saw any huge lines. We got customers from north of Bloomington that aren't going to get full. We got customers in Iowa and the north part of Iowa that aren't going to get full. And a lot of that has to do with, the corn yields not just not being there in some of those areas, but also some over-preparedness from the elevator standpoint. And we continue to see this corridor from Cedar Rapids into Decatur continue to be well supported on bases, much like last year when we continued to see overs for the most part of beginning of fall all the way through the end of the year. We have, Decatur's posted at overs today, Cedar Rapids posted at overs today, and we have a 14.5 billion bushel crop from what the USDA tells us anyway. Now, Greg's right, we've had some logistics issues with on the rail side, but for the most part, we had a somewhat of a delayed start to harvest. We're using about a billion bushels of corn a month domestically here between ethanol and feed. We have some pretty strong ethanol margins, continue to be well supported, at least on the truck side, as we look at from Decatur all the way into that Cedar Rapids market. So I think the short term here, we're going to continue to see some basis levels try to hang in there until you, Mr. Producer, decides to sell. And that continues to control the basis market, at least the last couple years, more than anything else. Last year, the farmer was a very inconsistent seller of corn, and that continued to support corn basis throughout the year, because we do have quite a monster in terms of just domestic demand that continues to be very hungry. Futures-wise, I think we continue to grind sideways. Basis stays somewhat supported in here until, like the rest of the panel said, the farmer decides to sell, and that's going to be kind of up to you at this point. I would prefer, if you don't mind, telling me the day before you do that, because that's going to dictate a lot of what we do on the basis side. But for the most part, I think some range-bound trade here moving forward, somewhat stagnant as we head into the end of the year.
Quick survey just down the line. What percentage of corn and soybeans do you believe is in farmers' hands still versus five-year averages?
I think the farmer's been a more aggressive seller of soybeans, just like last year. We've had some of our elevator customers have bought 50 to 60% of the beans already. The corn side lags behind that, probably closer to 30, 40%. So we had quite a bit of corn comparatively still to buy, but I think overall, if we look at from the elevator standpoint, probably 30 to 40% of the corn has been bought and 50 to 60% of the beans, maybe a few more in some like locations.
Bill? I guess I'd say I'd go right along with that on the corn, 40%, 40 to 50%, I'd say, and maybe be a little bit higher than Aaron on the bean side. I'd say maybe even up to 75% of the beans been sold.
Matt?
Well, I think whenever you talk to a lot of elevator guys, and Aaron probably concur with this, there was very little, whenever you look at the five-year average, that had been purchased prior to harvest. I mean, forward selling, as you guys know, was probably not near what it should have been. And so that puts us in the situation we're in, and I agree with these guys. I mean, it's hard to tell exactly, but I would say shy of 50% for sure on corn. I think that people have been way more tight-fisted. And then on beans, I'm definitely over 50%. It's tough to say, but I'm going to say, somewhere in that two-thirds to three-quarters range.
I think normally we're 40% done or sold corn and beans by the end of December. This year the corn is less than that, probably 30 to 35, and beans probably 50 to 60. So we've done a better job of selling beans ahead. Corn, thank goodness we've got this rally. I think people can make some catch-up sales now, but up to this point, I think corn sales are still lagging behind the average.
I was at the National Association of Farm Broadcasters convention recently, and I was talking to the trade associations, particularly grain and feed associations, about the issue regarding the train, and I asked them, well, you guys are talking directly to the Surface Transportation Board. You're seeing the reports that are now required to be released weekly by the train companies. reading between all the lines, what do you think will happen in the short term and in the long term? And the thing about it is that at least on a national level, it seems like there's not a lot of optimism that this thing is going to unsnarl itself anytime soon. And by that, I mean even in maybe into the spring. If that were be to the case, and it came down to that on our local level here, where we live, what would that mean for BASIS? And I'll go ahead and start with Bill.
Well, I guess, Dave, I think the market will figure out the solution to that. And by that, I mean, like with the meal situation we saw this fall, we saw the prices get to the point where it was it worked to import meal into the East Coast from South America, and there was a little bit of that came in, and that, you know, actually took care of some of the needs out there. So I think it still boils down, I guess, maybe as a short answer, to when the farmer lets go of the grain. I think that's still going to be, now that we're past the harvest part of it and the grain's put away, I think the basis stays fairly strong until we see some farmer movement out of the, you know, either out of the stored elevator bushels or off the farm.
Matt, what say you? And I know trains are at least 3 to 4 weeks late, and maybe even further late in many areas.
Well, I think it just stands to reason that if the rail situation doesn't get figured out, that BASIS is going to have to stay fairly strong. But again, just like Bill's saying, a lot of it's going to come down to, you know, whenever there's a whole lot of sales made, obviously, we're going to end up having more beans on the market. But, you know, in my opinion, it's just going to boil down to, at what point do you get the pipeline filled both on bean meal and beans everywhere that beans need to be in the country? Because regionally speaking, there was a lot of places running short or simply out of beans going into the fall. Whenever you had to carry out that small, that's what the situation was. We have to remember that most of our forecasts are that the carry out is going to go from sub 100 to 450, maybe, you know, 400 to 500, depending on who you talk to. But currently it's at 450. That's an enormous difference. And so obviously there's going to be some changes moving forward. It's just a matter of when those happen.
Greg?
Yeah, as Matt said, as we transition from the shortest bean carryout ever to one of the largest bean carryout evers, there are going to be snags along the way, and we can take advantage of that. When basis levels pop, when the board pops, I think that's an advantage. Keep in mind the big picture. We are going from a 100 million bushel carryout to, I think, a 500 million bushel carryout. I'm on the upper end of Matt's range. So, you know, the big picture is there's plenty of beans out there. It's just been a problem of getting them from point A to point B. You know, it's not like a drought year where we have less beans today than we did last week. We still have the beans out there. We just can't get them to the processor, and the processor can't get the meal to the feeders. So I would say, don't get too caught up in this. Just keep in mind that we will have hiccups along the way as we transition from this short bean crop, but we have plenty out there.
Aaron.
Not much new to really add to that. I think, you know, if logistics or rail logistics continue to be a struggle, I mean, the truck market's going to stay somewhat firmly supported, which is what we've seen here the last 6 weeks or so. We have seen some improvement, at least in the Illinois markets, at least the BN market, which services some of the western side of Illinois. The secondary freight market has improved dramatically here in the last 6 weeks or so. There's going to be some BN trains actually loaded here, and have been loaded here recently and headed into the winter months, which is something we haven't seen in a while anyway for some of those BN loader markets. UP markets in Iowa continue to improve, being somewhat competitive with the ethanol markets now. So there has been some rail improvement. Now you get farther north into the Dakotas and out Nebraska and those kind of areas, it's a little bit different story. And we still need to see some improvement on the NS markets heading east. But there has been some improvement. But, you know, until it continues to improve and get to where we want it to be, at least for those that want to load rail, the truck market's going to continue to have some support.
We hear either rumors or actual facts that there is foreign grain coming into the United States, French wheat coming into the U.S., soybeans being sourced out of Brazil for the feeders in the southeast. Do you believe that this is in fact factual? Is it rumor to drive futures? And if it is indeed factual, what does it say about how bought up end users are in the marketplace? And we will begin with Greg.
I think it's a fact that it has happened, but if you look at the amount that is being imported compared to what we use for a yearly basis, it's a very, very small percentage. So I don't think we're going to be able to import our way out of this problem. But keep in mind that this meal spread, the inverse was tremendous, like $40 or $50 between the December and next July. So the market is giving incentives to people to try to figure out a way to get meal and soybeans, for that matter, moving in the short run. Again, we don't have a shortage of beans. We just can't get them from point A to point B. And if the rail can't get can't provide service, then maybe boats are the way to do it. But again, you're not going to solve your problems by boats. I mean, you know, that's just such a small percentage of what we can import. So that's not going to solve our problems. We just basically have to wait for the railroads to get their act a little bit more together.
Matt?
Yeah, I know that it goes on. In summer of 13, the elevator system I was working with, we lost some business in the southeast to Argentine corn. They were able to ship it in 40 cents cheaper, including, putting it on a ship and sending it clear up to the southeast, and so they had to back off of buying from us. Obviously, a lot of that was 12 corn, and so not only was it cheaper for them, but it was better quality than what we had, bottom line, because we had aflatoxin, no doubt about it. But, I think I'm like Greg. It's a small percentage, and the bottom line is with feeders in the southeast, if they can get the product cheaper somewhere, they're going to find a way to get it. I mean, it's just like us. I mean, we're not going to go to an elevator that's bidding a quarter less than one that we generally deal with, unless it's just that much farther away because it's a better deal for us, and you've got to do what you've got to do as a businessman. So, you know, it's just a function of the marketplace, and I think, I think it's going to work itself out because, as Greg and I were both saying, whenever you have such a tight situation and you move it to a plethora of beans situation, and obviously with corn we've got a much bigger carryout than what we had this past year going into the crop, you're definitely going to have some growing pains in there. You're going to have situations where the basis is probably going to drop, and nobody knows exactly when that's going to happen, but it's definitely going to happen.
Bill?
I don't know if I have a lot to add to what these two guys have said, and I agree with Greg. I don't think the amount is enough to solve the problem, but I think it also, for that guy that's trying to buy meal down there in Southeast, the fact that he does have that as a option helps him to negotiate a better deal from the, from the Midwest. The fact that he can go to that, bring it in that way from South America. But just to add to that, I think we're kind of in a weather market situation on the beans right now. We have a situation in South America that weather is really critical, and we need to continue to see weather improve down there, I believe, to get the kind of crop that people were expecting a couple months ago going into the growing season. So, and I don't think it's critical yet, but I think it's definitely something to keep an eye on. And that time frame as to when the South American crop starts coming off and whenever we start seeing them get in the export market probably has some tendency to change our basis here as well.
Aaron?
You know, the cash connected people that we deal with, at least on the CIF side that trade the barge market, they could never confirm any meal trading into the East Coast. Now, it doesn't say it doesn't happen because they don't see all the business, but and it's not necessarily a surprise if it did happen because that's somewhat common late in the summer when beans get tight, especially to some of those hog feeders in the east. But I agree with the rest of the table here. It's not going to move the needle a whole lot, and we've already seen spreads somewhat relax, at least in the meal side. And I think we're going to continue to see transportation improve farther east, and some of this is going to take care of it of itself. But I don't think it moves the needle too much to make a big difference in the long run.
Thank you. We also have to look at the demand side. We talked a little bit about soybean demand. We also need to talk a little bit more about corn demand. There are, of course, three legs to this, ethanol being one, livestock market being two, export markets being three primary legs on the corn side. We all know that the cattle herd is smaller, and so we have to begin to ask ourselves, will the size of the cattle herd get larger in 2015? Ethanol has been good to excellent, and I wouldn't be surprised if after we tallied up the year that whatever renewable fuel standard the Environmental Protection Agency eventually comes up with, we've exceeded. And then, of course, the third leg of it is demand. Corn demand has run a little bit ahead of what is needed for the year, but it hasn't been stellar yet. So I guess we have to talk about the demand side and your views of demand heading into the new year. And on this one, we'll begin with Matt.
Well, obviously on the cattle side of it, to me, it's really tough to grow a herd very quickly. But whenever you look at heifer retention, there is heifer retention, especially as the year has gone on. But, you know, as a lot of people know, guys in the cattle industry for several years weren't making a ton of money. Now, the last couple, 3 years, things have gone better. And especially this year, earlier on in the year, whenever you could take a guy that had a heifer, didn't have a whole lot of money into her, and someone's going to offer him $1,300, $1,400 for her, it's pretty easy for some guys just to go ahead and let her go. But as we go forward, the herd will build. It's just going to take quite a bit of time, and it's not going to be an effect that we're going to feel quickly. But anybody else in the livestock industry, hopefully we don't have PEDV to the level we did last year, but everyone else is able to expand a little bit quicker, and pretty much everyone is making good money. And then you look at ethanol this past week, we used up over 100 million bushel. Obviously, that's continued to get better every week. And I think when you look at the demand side of it, corn for exports obviously has not been a front-loaded to the degree of beans in the past. But I think that corn this year is going to stay fairly steady. And I look in the next several months for maybe some countries to step in, especially if the economics stay the same way, because you're hearing about a lot of countries other than just the U.S. that are backing off a little bit on what they're expecting to plant for corn. And so if I'm a country who's looking to source cheap corn, I don't know that I want to be caught going into a situation where there's not a whole lot of corn planted worldwide, especially if you end up having some sort of a weather problem. And so, in my opinion, demand's going to be pretty strong for corn. We're not going to source this enormous amount of demand that we weren't expecting like we were last year. If you remember, last year we started out at a $2 billion projection on carryout, and we ended up at 1.2. I don't think we're going to see that again this year, but if you remember, about 2 months ago, there was people talking a 2.5 carryout, and I don't think that's going to be the case either. I'm definitely a sub-$2 billion carryout person.
Bill?
I would definitely agree with Matt on the cattle side of it. I think we made the turn from declining numbers to increasing numbers. We're seeing them start to increase, but there's several factors there. Matt mentioned one of them, just, you know, the price of being able to sell feeder cattle versus retaining them. And I think the age of the industry has entered into that as well. The logistics, I think you had a lot of older producers in that business that just really don't necessarily look at expanding right now. But overall, I'd say the livestock side of things, I think, looks promising, and I believe we could see the USDA numbers maybe increase a little bit from where they're at currently. On the ethanol side of it, I think they're pretty much spot on, and we're, you know, we're pretty steady from an ethanol standpoint over the, you know, next few years, probably, if you look out, depending on somewhat what the mandate. But I thought that the announcement on Friday where they deferred the announcement on the mandate was positive for ethanol, probably. From the export side, I guess I have a little bit disagreement with Matt from the standpoint of when I look at the strength of our dollar, I see some problems possibly on the horizon. We've got really the most expensive corn in the world right now, and it's pretty hard for us to get to compete with some of these other countries. And I believe Matt is right that they're going to maybe cut back on some of their acres of corn, and that may eventually help us. But right now, I think we're going to struggle a little bit on the export side of corn to be able to meet the numbers that the USDA has in their projections.
Bill?
That was Bill.
Oh. Greg?
Well, I don't say this very often, but I think the government's got it about right on the corn carryout at 2 billion bushels. Sometimes they're way off, but the three main uses, as Dave said, feed is pretty constant. We have four ethanol plants ourselves, and while ethanol margins are good right now, deferred margins are a little bit skinny. So, and the bottom line with ethanol is it's kind of a function of how many miles we drive. I mean, we're up against a blend wall right now. We can, for every gallon of gasoline we use, we can blend 10% ethanol. But if we don't use more gas, we really don't need more ethanol, regardless of the mandate. That might be more psychological than anything else, and it just doesn't feel like we're going to be driving more miles. Cars are more efficient, regardless of what the government unemployment statistics say. I don't think that many more people are working, so I think between less people driving to and from work and more efficient cars, the gas miles, the miles driven are a little bit low, so ethanol probably won't see a big increase there. And exports, you know, with the strong dollar, you know, we're looking at a 1.7, 1.8 billion export number. So bottom line is we can be 100 million, 200 million off one way or the other, but I don't want to quibble. I mean, we've got plenty of corn, 2 billion bushels, plus or minus a couple hundred million bushels, whether it's 1.8 or 2.1. You know, that's not what's going to get us a rally. What's going to get us a rally would be, as Matt said, if we plant less corn next year and that 2 billion carryout now all of a sudden goes to 1.5. If we, you know, depending on how many acres we plant. So I think the key is how many acres we plant new crop corn, and that might allow old crop corn to rally. And I think that's why you've seen some of the funds come in and buy this market. Not because we're running out of corn this year, they're already looking ahead to next year and knowing that if we don't plant 88 million acres of corn, you know, if we plant less than 88 million acres of corn, this corn market could get interesting in a hurry. So I think the funds probably have a bigger thing to say about the overall price of corn rather than those three demand factors, because, like I say, I think the government's pretty close on the three demand uses.
Aaron?
Yeah, not a lot to add to that. I think we're pretty close, too. Like Greg said, I think it continues to be, you know, somewhat financially driven in the ethanol market. I think the upside is still somewhat plateaued, is 5 billion, 5.1 billion bushel. I don't think we're going to see a lot of growth from that. Still driven by dollars from the blender side. If you can splash gasoline with a cheaper product in ethanol, you're going to do that all day long. Unfortunately, that relationship has changed here recently. If you watched ethanol futures, you've seen a sharp rally since the first part of October, and that's probably a little concerning to the ethanol plant here moving forward. Now, the backwardation of the futures market suggests that corrects itself a little bit, but all of a sudden you're talking about ethanol prices considerably higher than unleaded, and that might be a concern here moving forward. But I think ethanol continues to grind along, especially in those areas in western Illinois. That, like I mentioned earlier, that Cedar Rapids to Decatur corridor is continuing to grind as much as possible here, with ethanol margins being pretty good. On the export side, I think, you know, we've loaded a lot of beans here recently in the Gulf and just not being able to load a lot of corn because there's not a lot of room for everything to get loaded. We've been loading 100 million bushels here in beans last two or three weeks here, and that's a pretty good outpace for the export market to do at the Gulf market. So the corn has kind of taken a back seat. And I think we're going to continue to see that at least through the first part of the marketing year anyway, where corn just kind of grinds along in terms of export markets. Like the other panelists said, we got to watch, you know, what the dollar does and how we relate to the other markets. I think the Black Sea region continues to be kind of a thorn in our side from the export side, and so does Brazil. And one of the things we're going to be watching here as we move through the winter is how that second crop in Brazil's corn continues to do, and that continues to be a large part of their export market is that second crop. So if that would struggle, we might be able to see the corn export market hang around through the summer, which is really going to help grow that number. If there is any growth to be happening, it's going to happen in that those summer months from the U.S. standpoint if some of that competition kind of goes away.
I saw some numbers a few weeks ago that suggested that the producer could essentially lock up the entire carry of the corn market on farm storage if they wanted to. And you have suggested that the farmer is behind in marketing this year versus five-year averages. So thus, a lot of farmer corn is out there, which begs the question, after the new year, there will essentially be what is a second harvest. When do you think the window for that will come? And will it be futures or basis that will end up doing the heavy lifting to try to pry this grain out of patient farmer hands? And I, in this question, also am taking into account for you that to some degree it's gotten off to a little bit of a slow start in South America planting, although it's catching up. But Brazil corn may not be as significant in the new year as in the prior years. So given all of that, what does the heavy wind lifting and in what window does it do it? Aaron Curtis.
I think the farmer is going to continue to be patient. I think there was a lot of bins got dusted off this fall that have never been or haven't been used in a lot of years, and those bins are full of something right now. And I think the farmer is going to be somewhat patient, especially if we continue to bore the producer to death here with these futures prices if we stay in this rally or this range that we've been in right now. So I think it's going to be a while now. Unless the tax man tells you something different here by the end of the year, I think we're going to continue to watch the farmer hold this grain into the spring months and see if we can.
Bill?
I guess I think it'll be a combination, Dave, of the heavy lifting combination of the futures and bases. And as I said in my opening remarks, I don't think it necessarily has to happen at the same time. So I think the strategy from a farmer standpoint, looking out to the spring months, has to be let's look at that five-year average basis that Greg was talking about, figure we may have a little bit less than that, look at the futures, and if we get to those average basis numbers off of the futures that you can lock in, is it a number that you can live with? So in other words, July corn right now is out there around $4. If I can get a, you know, say in Central Illinois, 15 cent bases off of that, can I live with that 385 number? I think the caution that you have to approach it with is that you don't want to get pushed in this situation. We've all sat up here and said it's going to depend on when the farmer lets go of the grain. Aaron wants everybody to tell them before they do that, but unfortunately they don't do that, do they, Aaron? So don't get in a situation where the grain starts moving and you're forced into making sales when you don't want to. Try to, I think, you go out and lock in the future side of it when it's attractive and then wait to come in and get the bases locked in later.
Matt.
Yeah, I'd agree with especially locking in the carry. You know, there were several times this year where we could lock in 30 cents July over the D's, and so we were definitely telling guys, if nothing else, lock in the carry. But First of all, you're going to have somewhere to deliver grain, because out in the countryside, there's not too many places that's got a whole lot of room, if any, right now. And so I think it's going to be interesting to see if that frees up before the first of the year, because this second harvest, if you will, I mean, you've got to have somewhere to go with it. Now, some of the processors have room and, in fact, have been asking for corn. Obviously, when you're looking at overs, some of the processors have a fair amount. But until trains start showing up for some people, it might be tough for them to accept grain. I think maybe the heavy lifting might be done as far as whenever the first of the year rolls around by guys needing a little bit of money. I think that most of us are in better shape than what we were a few years ago, but I think a lot of us have spent a lot of money, too. If we're honest about it, there's been a lot of money spent in the last few years, whether it's tiling or if you were like me and went out and spent a bunch of money on a piece of farm ground that I got to pay for now. Obviously, it's expensive. And I do think that there's going to be some bills coming due, and there'll probably be a fair amount of grain that will move after the first of the year if it's got a home.
Greg?
The question was, do the futures or the basis do the heavy lifting? I think the futures have done a lot of the heavy lifting already and probably will continue to do a little bit more so. The funds are looking at less acres here next year. They're also looking at that South American crop, as Dave alluded to. They're planting beans, and they double crop corn after their beans. And so the beans are getting planted late. They're about 2 weeks behind. Probably really won't affect the bean yield so much. What it will affect is those amount of acres of double crop corn, because there is a window there where it gets too late to double crop corn. So I think the funds are looking at all of this, and less acres here, maybe less acres than what they thought in South America. And there's where your rally comes from. And then, as the panel has said, lock in that carry whenever you see attractive futures levels, whether that's $4 on the board or $4.20 on the board. But keep in mind, we were just $3.20 first of October. So we've had a nice little rally already. Not to say that we can't get a little bit more, and not to say that we can't get a little bit of a basis rally as well, because elevators are still transitioning from their fall bids to their out of the bin bids. So we'll see a little bit, but I think most of the increase is going to come from the future side, not from the basis side.
Greg Johnson and Matt Bennett, Bill Mayer, Aaron Curtis. Give them a well-earned round of applause, please.